guess I ain't done yet.
Hey, what's up? What's going on? This is Matthew Kirby, host of the Dear Fathers Podcast, and we're back for another episode.
And what's good, everybody? It's Jesse Alex, the co-founder of Dear Fathers, also your co-host of the Dear Fathers Podcast, and y'all already know we're the premier media platform for Black fatherhood.
Get ready for another episode in 3, 2, 1.
Represent the house like Congress. You ain't known unless your whole team on. Niggas sounds for the family.
Hey everybody, what's up? This is Baron Davis. You're rocking with Dear Fathers, the premier media platform for Black fatherhood. This episode is sponsored by my company, You Wish and Black Santa, a company where we believe that giving has no season. You wish it, you dream it, and it will come true. No, I can't miss my
calling. So what's going on? Welcome back to another week, another conversation, another episode of the Dear Fathers Podcast with your host, Matthew Kirby, and of course, co-host Jesse. We're going to be getting into this thing here pretty soon, but I'm excited to be talking to another amazing father, one of many that are out there. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So y'all know how I do. Let's not waste any more time and get right into it. Welcome NBA and all-around great dad, Darrell White, to the Dear Fathers Podcast. Darrell, what's up? What's going on, man? How you feeling?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. Thank you, guys. I love what you guys are doing. So I'm doing great.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Jesse, what's going on, man? How you feeling?
Man, I'm doing good. As always, man, these conversations are very impactful, very important to the narrative of Black fatherhood. I'm glad to have a father like Darrell on today. I'm going to try not to bogged down the episode with too much sports talk because you already know, Matthew, y'all love the NBA and whatnot.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, I'm ready to get into the convo.
All right. Well, shoot, let's do it. I appreciate both of y'all being on again, but let's do a quick check-in. You know, we always like to start our episodes off really just seeing how everybody doing. You know, it's been a hell of a year with COVID and elections around the corner and just all other things that's going on. So Darrell, how you feeling, man? How you been adapting to COVID? How are you just adjusting to everything that's going on?
I just feel like every day is just a different challenge, you know. thank God, you know, I just got done playing in Europe. So I got here right before the pandemic. And basically quarantine is basically what I've been doing for the last few years, with staying in the house, go to practice and go right back home. So that part was kind of easy. But, you know, kids back in school now, you know, just trying to monitor them with their schoolwork and, you know, helping them and just trying to be an extra helper for the teacher. So it's been up and down, but, you know, I've been having a lot better days and bad days. So that's always a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I say this, I felt like I've said this on previous episodes and even just other parents that I know. So those of you that has been listening, you know, my kids aren't school age yet. So I don't know quite as much what the struggle is like. For those parents who have, you know, not only essentially just overnight become, you know, principal and hall monitor and teacher, right, and counselor, you know, and just all of those new things with those challenges. And then even just thinking about, you know, for those families that, you know, could be lower income or something like that, you know, just any of those like Wi-Fi challenges and equipment challenges and just all the different things that come with it. So I definitely want to give you a shout out and a kudos to you and your wife making it happen, trying to make sure the kiddo is good to go during the school year.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that because it's not easy.
Hey, trust me. I hear the horror stories. I hear you on that. Well, shoot. Well, let's do this. You know, take us back to the very beginning for those of people that have been, you know, under a rock or just anything of that nature. Take us back to when you were selected for the draft. How did it feel being selected 19th overall by the Heat first round? You know, what was that like for you?
Man, it was awesome. You know, I definitely can't say as a kid, I just dreamed to be an NBA player because that definitely wasn't a fact. You know, my dad was pretty much grooming myself and my little brother to be baseball players. So baseball was always my number one sport. And, you know, just over the years, I was just getting better and better with basketball. And it came to a point where I had to put all my eggs in one basket my senior year of high school with choosing either baseball or basketball. So just my short journey in basketball and just how, you know, I went under the radar for so many years and, you know, playing organized basketball at a high level for 3 years and then going out straight out of high school to the NBA was something that don't happen every day. So it was definitely a surreal moment, a humbling moment. And I was just so happy because all the work and all those things that my dad taught me, you know, during my childhood into that moment was finally coming to fruition. So it was definitely an amazing day. I was surrounded by all my best friends and close family, and we had a great time. We partied and you know, it was just exciting.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. So you know, obviously, you know, the Heat and the Lakers are playing. I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. I thought the Heat should be swept, but I want to get your take on, you know, this year's finals. And do you have any personal biases given that your former team is playing? What's your take on that?
Well, my take on it is I'm an LA kid, so I grew up as a Laker fan. And then, you know, me spending 6 years in Miami, that's like, you know, my second family, especially being 18. Like they groomed me to who I am today. And, you know, I look at it and I put out a tweet like 2 months ago, right before the playoffs started. And I said, I got Miami taking it all the way. And people thought I was crazy. So, you know, and that just came from me looking at that team and seeing how many guys that can play different positions, how many guys can give whoever comes out the West a problem on a defensive end. And, you know, I still stick to it. I know it's looking bad right now. But, you know, they got to the finals. They surprised a lot of people. But I think the Lakers might, you know, the experience might be putting them over the edge. And, you know, the injuries that happened in Miami is unfortunate.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. I hate when injuries happen in times like this because you don't get to see the real, you know, everybody 100%. It's always going to be, you know, somebody going to say, oh, Dragic didn't get hurt, this would have happened. I'd like to see everybody 100%. So you don't got those type of excuses. And I had a crazy conversation with a few of my friends back when the Heat had got Iguodala. I'm like, man, they getting him to make a run for the championship. My friends are like, man, crazy. The Heat ain't getting to they ain't making it past the second round. I'm like, all right, watch. And, you know, so it happened. They made it to the finals. But, no, that's dope. And we've had a handful of NBA guys on. And I've never asked this question before, man, but this might be something to think about. So, comparing being drafted in the NBA and then having your first kid, are those two types of excitements that are the same? Like, explain the comparisons between those two type of feelings. Like, man, they're both life-changing moments.
That's a great question, man. I would definitely have to pick my kid, my first one. I knew, you know, growing up, I wanted to be a young father just because my parents were. I knew the relationship I had with my mom and dad growing up. I wanted that same thing. My mom and dad were able to relate to a lot of things I was going through on a day-to-day basis. So I was never afraid to go to my mom or dad and tell them what's going on in my life because I knew they'd be able to relate and I knew they'd be able to give me the best information to solve whatever it was I was trying to get through. So I definitely will say, you know, me becoming a father, a young father at that, at 20 years old and you know, having a boy at that, you know, the name lives on. So it was definitely way more exciting than getting drafted right. Because come on, that's what we want, you know, men make men, I think. And we want that name to live on forever and create that legacy.
Right. No, that's cool, man. That's dope. And just thinking about, you know, your career in the league, do you have a favorite moment or like a favorite game or like tell us about that. Like, what was your favorite moment in the NBA?
Well, obviously, you know, us winning the 2006 championship was definitely high on my list. I was 19 at that time when we won our first championship. So just going through that experience, you know, going through high school, never really winning nothing that big, and then being on the highest stage, winning a championship with players that I idolized growing up, like a Shaquille O'Neal, Jason Williams, Antoine Walker, Dwayne Wade, all these great players, and me being on a team with these guys and seeing those guys' leadership and how they carried themselves, how professional those guys were, it's kind of like, you know, what gave me longevity as a professional player because, listen, I was able to see the best of the best do it every single day from a work ethic standpoint, taking care of their bodies, eating the right things, being on time. Just those small things that a lot of rookies, a lot of second year players don't get to get because they don't have good veterans around them.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I really feel like in really whether it's basketball, football, whatever the case may be, it's one of those things. And even just listen to you say that, like, for some reason, my mind just kind of jumped to OBJ real quick. You know, we know he's on the Browns and all that right now, but I just feel like, you know, dude has hella talent, you know, could be, you know, arguably one of the better receivers in the league, but just the situations he's been in, you know, we kind of seen how his time in New York has turned down, and then, you know, Browns, you know, they can be 50-50 any day of the week. So it's just one of those things where literally, like, you know, it's a difference between good and great, especially when we think about what situation a player can be in. So that definitely makes a difference. So
yeah, it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. So one of the things, you know, prior before this conversation, you know, I thought this was pretty interesting that you did, but, you know, apparently you got a talk show going on, but it's different. So, you know, talk to me about, like, this concept of the text message talk show and how you became motivated to curate this one of a kind platform. I ain't never seen nothing like it.
Man, it's so innovative, and I definitely can't take all the credit. Players Tribune reached out to me, and, you know, when they reached out to me, they knew I had ideas of doing a podcast and doing something with, you know, interviewing my close friends. So a lot of these people you see me interview are people I've been knowing for years. So they knew the relationships I had. So, you know, they wanted to try something new. And I got to be honest with you guys, I didn't see it in the beginning. I was like text message. And then, you know, they kind of explained it to me. Like, you know, just imagine your group chat. And the first thing I could think of is, you know, all my boys that I grew up with, and we're all either NBA players, overseas guys, or, you know, 9-to-5 guys. So we got three different type of guys in our group chat. And it's kind of some of the best conversation. We're all over the place. It's sports, relationship. It's so much stuff that we talk about, laughing, joking around. And it's like, damn, okay. I know it's a lot of people in the world that would love to read our conversation. If I handed them my phone, they would think this is so entertaining. So when Players Tribune, you know, presented it to me, you know, it took me a little time to, you know, really understand. And I was like, yo, this is the next way. This is crazy. Like, this is so dope. People can see my personality, you know, through text, and, you know, just see how I am as, you know, on a day to day with interviewing my friends. So it's definitely a great concept. I love it. It's been so great. And yeah, man, I'm looking for it to be bigger and better. And I'm pretty sure you're going to see a lot of people mimicking what we're doing because it's just so new.
Nah, it's super dope, man. Commend you on that. And I know what you mean about the group chat. Me and my friends, man, we always laugh about our group chat because we're like, man, if anybody see this, they're going to be here for a rude awakening of some of the stuff that we be talking about. It's so entertaining.
For sure.
But just even to think about that, though, you know, you had guys on, you know, from the relationships that you had. I think you even recently had KD a part of it. But if you could think about, like, a top NBA father that you could have on your platform to do that, who would it be and why?
It'll probably be my boy, Russell Westbrook. You know, Russ seeing me be a young father, Russ and I went to high school together. So, you know, somebody I took under my wing at a young age when he was a freshman in high school. So he was able to see me be a young father. He was able to spend a lot of time around my son. And now that I see him with his own family, he has his oldest is a boy. Now he has twin girls. And just to see how he is, how active he is, and how loving, and just you see it all over the social media when his wife and he posts stuff. So that'll definitely be somebody I interview because, you know, Russell, the way he plays the game in between the lines, he gets a lot of negative energy towards him, and people really don't know what type of guy he is. Just like, you know, what he did with giving the $8,000 tip to the housekeeping. That's just what type of guy he is. That didn't surprise me at all. He's a caring guy. He's a loving guy. And if if he sees somebody that's, you know, working their butt off and doing the right thing, he's going to, you know, make sure he's taken care of. So he would definitely be one of those guys I would love to interview about, you know, fatherhood and how it is on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, I think he would be a great person, man. I see him, like you said, with his wife, with his kids on Instagram. It always looks super dope. And it's kind of crazy to me that people can't separate who a person is in their career on the court from who they are outside of it. They think like, oh, he must be this mean guy, you know, outside the court, which I don't see why people's minds work like that. It's kind of crazy to me, man, but that's just how people are. You know, tapping into you, man, who is Darrell as a father? If you had to, you know, kind of just, you know, tell us who you are as a father, what would that look like? What type of father are you?
You know, I'm a mixture of the old school with the new school. I really, you know, my dad said something to me when I was a teenager. You know, of course, when you're a teenager, that's when you start bumping heads with your father a little bit. You know, you start challenging the things that he tries to discipline you on. You try to you challenge your father. That's just part of becoming a young man, you know, a young adult, you know, because you think you're grown. And a lot of the things that my dad used to tell me as a kid, he's like, one day you're going to come back to me. You're going to say thank you. And I used to think he was crazy out of his dang mind to think that I would come back and say, yo, dad, thanks for, you know, being hard on me. Thanks for, you know, getting me to places on time, being professional. No, I'm not telling you that. And then it came a time I was like, damn, I really need to thank my dad because I'm getting to places on time. I'm being professional. People were like, man, whoever raised you, they need a raise. They always complimented my parents for things I did. I was like, dang, you know, I'm thinking it's regular, but he was trying to get me, you know, to be a professional when it came to the real world and my mom and dad aren't around. I got to, you know, be on my own. So I had to thank him for that. So a lot of the things he installed in me is the same things I'm trying to install in my kids. And, you know, just try to be the best father I can every single day. You know, every day is a new challenge. Every day these kids are getting older. So I just try to be the best dad I can. And the most important thing is try to understand where they're coming from. So I got a little bit of discipline in me and I got a little bit of, okay, I'm going to hear you out, you know, because the new school wave, I'm going to hear you out. So that's how I am as a father.
Right. You're right about that. And like, even just thinking about, you know, how that new school is and, you know, sometimes you gotta, you know, I tell my 3-year-old because my 1-year-old is just trying to figure out how to walk. So he can't talk all the way yet. But I try to hear sometimes my logic or my 3-year-old's logic, you know, when she's trying to make a case for an extra popsicle or another cookie or something. And I'm like, look here, child, what we're not going to do is give you something sweet. And you're about to go to bed in 15 minutes. It's not happening. We not setting not ourselves happening. Up for failure with that. But no, right. Even just thinking about, I mean, I know this affects me as a father, and I'm sure this has for you, but, you know, what have you kind of learned about your kids during the quarantine since, you know, collectively everyone is, you know, in the same quarters more often, you know, we're not traveling as much. You know, what are some of those things that you've learned?
I would say that both of mine are just so entertaining. My youngest acts so much like me. You know, being a younger child and me being an older kid in the house and having a little brother, you know, big bro always messing with little bro. And just to see the comebacks and the stuff my little one says to the older one is so hilarious, you know. And sometimes, you know, I'm supposed to get on them like, oh, man, that's not cool. But it's so funny because I know being a big brother, you're picking on little bro. So. Just to see how entertaining they are. My oldest is always on TikTok. So my wife and I sit there and spy and creep on his page and get a great laugh out of the dances and the people he's trying to impersonate and stuff like that. So just their entertainment level is pretty hilarious around here.
Yeah, I believe it. And I just feel like even just some of these moments that we have, of course, doing the quarantine and all that good stuff that we as parents, we just really tapping into, you know, our kids' personalities. Again, I'm kind of at the beginning where I'm starting to see those personalities. But I mean, even with folks for older kids, I know their personalities are on blast right now during this time. And and this is one of those things, and you made a good point earlier, and I wanted to bring this up now, but, you know, just thinking about that power struggle we was talking about, you know, as a father, you know, what's your take in a sense on a temper tantrum between a toddler versus, you know, them being in their teenage years or older years? And like, what was like your first kind of experiences with that, and how'd you handle it?
You know, I looked at my son crazy, like, whoa, like, what are you doing? Like, you're too old to be acting like that. You know, one thing my father always let me know and made sure and made it clear, loud and clear, is that I'm the role model and my little brother is looking up to me. So everything I do, he's going to do. So my biggest thing is when you're around here, you're doing stuff, you're saying things, you got to remember there's somebody in here that's looking up to you and that idolizes you. So you got to make sure when you're doing stuff, you know, you got to think, hey, man, my little brother's watching me right now, so I can't act like this. So, you know, I try to coach him more on that. Like, hey, man, you got somebody that's really look up to you. Look at my little brother. You know, he's an NBA player now. I'm pretty sure I was inspiring him. He was looking up to me. He probably didn't say it all the time, but he was watching every move I did. And if I was acting crazy or wanted to be in the streets, he probably would have followed that. So you got to make sure when you're doing stuff around here, watch how you respond to myself and your mom. Because if you respond to us disrespectfully, your younger brother feels that he can do the same thing. So we try to nip those things in the butt and, you know, just tell him, you know, if you want to be someone we trust and someone, you know, that people can look up to, you got to carry yourself a certain way.
Right. You're right about that. Like even just me, I'm thinking about my little ones. So like during the times where, you know, they do have temper tantrums, it's not real often, but it's always hilarious to me. So number one of the things that I don't do, I don't really feed into it. If anything, you can ask me or my wife. So whether it's the big one or the little one throwing a tantrum, we'll just kind of calmly just put them on the floor. My wife would be like, go on, finish. At least you're not going to throw your head back and hit something. You know, she'll throw a pillow down there or something like that. And then me, I just be cracking up on the inside. And I don't know if you remember, even from your kids when they were younger, like if they were anything like mine, you know, they'll be in the middle of a tantrum and then they'll kind of just like open up one eye to see who's watching and everything. And I'm like, yeah, we see you acting. You trying to win an award or something. And then they'd be, and then my bigger one nowadays, she'd be like, all right, all done. I'm like, good. Now go play with your tablet or something like that.
right. Yeah, so it's definitely hilarious because they're definitely putting on the show.
Right. Yeah. And this it's just kind of crazy just to kind of sit back and watch because, you know, just being as a parent, even maybe some of the younger parents that are out there listening, you know, you'd be wanting to crack up. But at the same time, you know, like, all right, I got to put my dad face on or something like that. But it's just crazy thinking about those times for sure.
Definitely is, man. So Darrell, I didn't mention this when we, you know, kind of first got on, but I don't have any kids yet. So my basis for wanting to start the platform is being that I grew up without a dad. But I got this story when I was a kid. And I vaguely remember, but I remember I was mad about something. I was in my grandma's house and I had like a little tantrum. And I went downstairs and I like put ketchup on my body or something. And I was like,
man.
And she came down there and I was just like playing dead or something. She's like, boy, if you don't get up, like I was just doing the most or something, man. It was just, I remember that. It's a vague memory, but I do remember me doing that. And she was like, man, if you don't get up, just doing
that
the most.
That is hilarious.
Kids be wilding for sure.
Yeah, kids definitely be wilding for sure.
Dang, Jesse, wasting your mama, your grandma ketchup like that, man.
I don't know what I was on, man.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. But, you know, just kind of thinking about and segueing just a little bit, you know, I really like to talk about and even bring this up in conversations for any of our guests. But when I think about mental health, you know, it's so important nowadays for obvious reasons, right? We could be on that list forever. But for you, how has mental health played a part in your journey as a father? And what are some of those things that you do to maintain a good mental health state?
Kids can drive you crazy. They can definitely drive you crazy. And, you know, some days they don't have great days. And now that we're locked in the house all together, you know, more days, you know, stick out. But I think, you know, just, you know, taking that time for myself and doing things that make me happy, whether that's working out or, you know, just spending some time in my man cave, playing some video games, you know, just to keep me sane. So I think it's really big for fathers, and I know it's hard, but I think you really, really got to step away sometimes and do those things that make you happy as well, because it's a hard job. It's a job around us 24/7, 365. So you definitely got to find those times where you could get away and, you know, do something that makes you happy. And I kind of do that. And my wife does a great job with letting me and allowing me to get away sometimes from the craziness to do something that makes me happy, and vice versa. I try to do the same for her.
That's super needed, man. And it's good that you, you know, realize that and realize, obviously, you know, like you said, fatherhood is a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week thing. Mm. But, you know, sometimes you need to just kind of step away from that in order to do something that you love to do, man. So that's good that you and your wife kind of realize that and both give each other the opportunity to do so and come back home to the family. And that's going to help the kids at the end of the day. So, dear fathers, we do these monthly mental health sessions on Zoom called Straight Mental that features two black male mental health therapists, man. And it's just a great space, a safe space for men to kind of unpack how they're feeling, what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And we've done about four of them so far. And I feel like it's been really impactful for these black men, black fathers on there, because they just get to open up and talk about, you know, anything that they're going through and talk about it with the mental health therapist. So we feel like mental health is super important when it comes to parenting, to fatherhood, or just being a black man in general. So yeah, appreciate you for just sharing, you know, how you, you know, maintain a good state when it comes to that.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking about something, you know, we kind of touched the surface of this earlier in the conversation, but I really wanted to kind of focus on, and I love hearing people's stories about this or their time. So, you know, when you first found out you was going to be a father, you know, take mm-hmm. us back to that time. What, you know, what was going on? How'd you feel about it? You know, did you believe it? You know, what was going on with you during that time?
Man, I was just so excited. You know, my main thing was like, man, I hope it's a boy. So I was always on edge for that. And doing a lot of research, like, how do I know if this is a boy, this and that? So it was just super exciting, man. And like I said, I just wanted to have a son. So I wanted a healthy baby at that. Let me make sure I say that first. But, you know, second came, I hope it's a boy. So, you know, for the name to live on. So it was just one of those moments where when I found out, my wife told me, I was like, what? Like, really? So I'm going to tell my mom and dad, because like I told you, I was young. So that was the second thing. That's the third thing. Like, damn, okay, I'm going to tell my mom and dad this without them going crazy. So, yeah, those are my emotions. It was up and down. You know, I felt great about it. And the hardest thing was just, you know, telling my mom, like, hey, I'm really an adult now.
Nah, I totally get you, especially being young. You say you were 20, right?
Yeah, 20.
Yeah, that's got to be, you know, something kind of you nervous about to tell the parents, but no, I get it. Now, take us back to, do you remember like how you were feeling in the delivery room? Like when it was happening? Do you remember like your feeling then? Like, how were you feeling? What were you thinking? Like, take us back to that moment as well.
What I would tell you, one, the only thing I was thinking, I hope they don't got to wheel me out. That's the only thing I was thinking is like, man, I hope they don't got to wheel me up out of here. You know, it was just nervous. And one thing my dad did tell me, he's like, listen, you know, this is your girl, because we're, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend at the time. He's like, I'm going to give you one tip. When she's pushing and delivering that baby, don't hold her hand. I was like, what? He's like, I'm telling you, man, she's going to break your dang on hand if you hold her hand. So that was the one tip I got from my dad during the delivery. But, man, it was just exciting. You know how it is. You just
Right.
You talk to your wife every day about how you think he's going to look, the features, will he look more like you, will he look more like me? So it was just exciting just to see what our kid was going to look like too and who he favored more.
Right. And that's the thing right there. Like you just, you know, just kind of the way that this works, you know, you never know what the kiddo in a sense is going to look like or who they going to gravitate to most. So I definitely feel you on that. I feel like I'm in a situation and maybe this is true of most fathers, but I feel like the daughters always come out looking like the fathers and then the sons be looking like the moms sometimes, just depending on the situation. For sure. I know for us, you know, my daughter is like my wife. So I'm kind of cool, calm and collected. Probably because I'm from down south out of the family. And then my wife, she from Philly. So, you know, city girl all day long. So, like, you know, I see this vibrant personality in my daughter, even though she looked like me. And then my son, even though he don't look like me, is like me, you know, and everything. So it's just kind of crazy how those things turn out. And it's always funny. Always funny just to see what that'll look like, especially as they continue to get older and just developing all that good stuff.
Heck yeah, it's always fun.
And you know what? Being that this episode is sponsored by Black Santa, where giving has no season, Darrell, take us back to your favorite Christmas moment as a parent and what made that special for you?
Man, I can't even pick one. It's all of them. Just to see the joy on my kids' face when they come downstairs and see, you know, all their gifts out and just see how appreciative they are. You know, it's not like, oh, I didn't get this. It wasn't, you know, this and that. I don't like this. They're so appreciative. And I love that about them because, you know, I work my butt off. My wife works her butt off to put our family in position to be able to provide for them and fulfill whatever it is that they want. So just being able to get them things and seeing those faces, you know, go ear to ear is so awesome. And them understanding Christmas isn't just about getting gifts. It's even more humbling, you know, and knowing why we're celebrating Christmas and the history of Christmas and all that. So that would definitely be my answer, all of them, because they always have that same energy, same excitement. And I love that.
Nah, that's dope, man. We definitely appreciate that. And Darrell, so I kind of use these podcast episodes as like learning lessons because I feel like we're talking to all these fathers, telling stories of all these fathers. I should be the best dad there is when it is time for me to have kids. So here goes a question for y'all when it comes to, and Matthew, you answer this too, when it comes to Christmas. Man, what's a good age, like, or what's the age when your kids don't believe in Santa anymore? You tell them Santa's not real. Does it just kind of, does it happen naturally? Or is it like, how does that work? You know what I mean? Like, what y'all do with that? Well, Matthew, I know your kids are younger, so you probably haven't, you know, experienced that yet. But what y'all think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a kid, you know how it was. We learned everything at school. You know, me being an inner city kid and growing up with kids that were a little bit more mature, you know, and made fun of you for having certain beliefs, which is, you know, crazy looking back that you got made fun of the things that you believed in, you know. But I think, you know, they're going to learn it at school. And then they come to us and be like, yo, they for the confirmation, like, yo, somebody told me this. And then you got to, I think that's when you tell them. But when they're of age, you know, I have a 12-year-old and I can't even say, I don't even want to talk too loud because I don't even know if he, like what side of the fence he on right now. And it's funny because I just had this thought come through my head, like, damn, I wonder if he's still, but man, I'm just going to let him come to us or make a little joke like, man, come on, bro, this isn't even real. So, but that's where I think they learn it at school.
Yeah. Right, and cool. I kind of agree with you in that sense. Like, you know, for some of these things, you know, we got a ton of lessons that we're going to be teaching our kids anyways. And this is one of those things where, like you said earlier, like just come to me. I'll confirm it. Mm-hmm. I won't tell you proactively, but I'll confirm it. Like you alluded to earlier, Jesse, you know, my kiddos are still young, so they still with it and they can be with it as long as needed. But I mean, I'm even just thinking about myself, like I think when I first found out that Santa Claus wasn't real, it kind of made a little sense. Like maybe this, maybe it's because this came shortly after, you know, when my mom broke the news that she was the Tooth Fairy and, you know, didn't nobody fly, you know, dollar under my pillow. So I'm like, all right, mama must be Santa Claus too. And, you know, I didn't take that as hard, but for some reason, you know, something hit different when I found out that the Easter Bunny wasn't real. Like, I don't know. Like, that was the one for me growing up. Like, the Easter Bunny not real? So, you know, what about the eggs and the chocolates and the candies? That's you too, right, mama? So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I came to her on that and I was very disappointed. But, you know, I just think, you know, Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, you know, whatever other figures that the kid may know of, it may just depend. Jesse, I don't know if there's a certain age or a time into that, but I would say, you know, let them come to you.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. I appreciate that. I'm going to take note of that because I don't want to get to the point of my kid age. I'm like, look here, son. Ain't no Santa Claus. You know what I'm saying? So right. I'm going to just let them come to terms on their own time. So, yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Right. No, that's a good question, though, because it's like, you know, even for me, you know, I'm in the beginning in a sense. So I always be tapping on, you know, dads like Darrell and just folks who are like further along than me. It's like, how did you handle, you know, what did you do about this? So, no, that makes sense. And, you know, I would be removed if I didn't tap into your and your father's relationship, Darrell. So, like, what was that like growing up, you know, as a kid? And how do you feel like that has impacted you even today?
Oh, it was great. You know, my dad grew up with a single mother, with five or six, I think it was six of them, and on the east side of Los Angeles. So, you know, she had to be strict because the era they grew up in, you know, and in the area they grew up in. So my grandmother was super strict on all her kids. So, you know, that kind of, you know, went with my dad. And my dad, my grandfather, you know, came in my father's life, you know, more when he was older. So I think he vowed to make sure that he would never do the things that his father did. So he took pride in being a great dad. He took pride in, you know, spending time with us and working on our craft because he grew up trying to be a baseball player as well and a football player. But he had nobody to teach him, you know, basic skills. They always came from the people in the neighborhood, somebody else's dad, maybe a youth coach. So he wanted to be that father that was always, you know, around when it came to, you know, giving us that boost and giving us that extra help. So he always did his due diligence. We'd come in house, he'd probably order something off the dang on TV he saw that could get you, you know, your back speed quicker, your hands quicker. You know what I mean? He did that research because he didn't know. So, you know, we really appreciate him more and more when you think about the things or when I'm outside in the front yard working with my kid and my patience is running low. And it's like, damn, my dad did this with two kids. I got to find a way to be a little more patient and a better teacher. So just looking back on it, he was a great teacher. I don't want to say great motivator because it was either you're going to do this right or it's going to be consequences to it. So that kind of got an asterisk by it.
Right.
But yeah, I think he did a good job with keeping us active and busy. And that's all you can ask for because growing up in the inner city of Los Angeles, where, you know, you see guns, drugs and gangs often, you know, it's kind of hard to keep your kids away from that when all their friends are influenced by that. So I think he did a great job of keeping us active and making us play all sports. So we were always in the gym or on a field.
Right. And that makes the difference, you know, and shout out the pops, you know, it's definitely, I always feel that generally speaking, you know, honestly, regardless of what age you are as a kid, you know, like the busier that we can keep you, is the less time you have to get into stuff, you know, and
man,
you know, whether that's little things here and there around the house or even more serious things, you know, when we talk about things that can have legal consequences, like, you know, it's kind of hard for you to mess up if you at practice, or if you're at your job or something like that. So yeah, that's pretty big. And I feel like I'm evolving into that parent as well. Granted, even though it's mine a little, but you know, they still be finding ways to get into stuff. But maybe that's just where I'm at on my parenting journey. Yeah. But you know, we've been having such an amazing conversation throughout this episode. And I really want to make sure that I tap into our segment here where we ask you, the guests, you know, to think about and verbally write a short letter to your father. So my question for you is, if you could write a short letter to your father, starting with "Dear Father," what would you say and how would it go?
The biggest thing I say is, "Dear Father, thank you for everything. The things that you taught me and installed in me at a young age is still things I'm putting out there in today's life. You know, the biggest thing is being blue collar, you know, being professional, being likable, you know, smiling and stuff like that. I'm still doing that to this day. So those are the things I thank him for. And what things I want him to do is hurry up and retire and stop being so humble, because you got two NBA kids. Stop being so humble. So that'd be my letter to my father, is doing what he told me I would do at 14 years old. Now was coming back one day, thanking him. And he wasn't lying at all.
No, sounds good. Absolutely. Like it's always one of those things. And, you know, I'm well on my way as well. But for any kid that can just really, at whatever point, just, you know, just take care of their parents. You know, they've been working hard, like you said, you know, both his boys, NBA folks. So, you know, I don't know how big.
And my dad does not want to retire.
He don't want to retire?
Man, I'll be like, bro, when are you going? My mom just retired 2 years. I think it's almost a year. And I'm like, dude, when are you going to retire? But that's right. Who he is. He's one of those hard workers. He watched his mom get up and go to work every day. So he feel like that's what his job is to do. So salute to him. But man, we got to find something else for this guy to do.
Where you live at? He in LA?
He's still in SoCal, in the same house we grew up in. Construction worker. Yeah, he's a construction worker. He's a handyman, something that definitely skipped over me, and my wife is not happy about that.
Oh man.
He can make, build, do anything. So the house we grew up in, he completely just did the whole house from inside to outside by himself. So it's pretty impressive when you go over there, because, you know, I got to remind my kids, like, hey, this house did not look like this when I grew up. So don't think it's sweet around here. All right.
Nah, that's commendable, though, that he's just doing what he's got to do, man. And he's just staying tapped in with it. Do you and your brother, how often do y'all, you know, kind of see your dad? Is it often? I know, you know, your brother's playing for the Mavericks right now. And you doing your thing. How often do y'all kind of all link up and see each other?
Not as much as we wanted to. Now that I'm back, you know, I was spending 8 to 10 months in Europe playing my season. So I try to see those guys at least 2 or 3 times in the summertime when I come down to LA. They come up here a few times during the summer as well. So we try to get together, link up. My dad is a real low key dude. He's in a homebody, and you know, he has his own life too. So sometimes we're not as cool to hang out with, I think. So we try to get together as much as possible, man, and just break bread and just see what's going on in everybody's life.
Hey, nothing wrong with that, man. Like, these, just given the times that we're in, you know, just spending that time, whenever that time is, with family, it just hit different nowadays. You know, just the way people are.
For sure.
I leave in this world, you know, whether it's bullets by the police or COVID or cancer, or, you know, it can get real grim real quick. So definitely capitalize on that time. But look, Darrell, you know, before you go, before we get out of here, you got to tell us, you know, what's next for you, what's going on, and how can people connect with you and see what you're up to moving forward?
You know, my biggest thing and the thing, you know, I hold my most pride on is my foundation that myself and my brother have. It's called Right Legacy, the Right Legacy Foundation. And we give scholarships, 5 scholarships to students every year. So that's one of my most humbling things I've done the last, what I think I've been doing is the last maybe 7 years, you know, giving out scholarships to these kids that have dreams that come from the same background I come from. Definitely my foundation, the Right Legacy Foundation. Also my AAU program that's here in the Bay Area, Right Legacy as well. And giving back to these kids and having guys like myself and like a Zaza Pachulia around and letting these kids know, like, it can happen if you put the work in. If you want to, you know, set that goal, set that dream to be an NBA player, it can happen. But if not, we will also have the resources for you to be whatever it is you want to be. So, man, that's where all my pride and joy is. They could find me on Instagram, DRightWayUno, Twitter, DRightWay1. I'm also on the community app, so they could find my phone number in my bio on both platforms and mentoring, questions about fatherhood, whatever it is, you know, my phone number is on there and, you know, they can hit me right up and it comes to my phone and, you know, I get back to them.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's pretty amazing. You know, just both of those things, two of the many things I'm sure you got going on. And it's amazing how, you know, we'll be able to take note and see what's going on. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to just watching all the greatness that's going to continue to come, especially as, you know, we at this point, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but just putting 2020 behind us, it's been a hell of a year so far. Yes, so sir. just to kind of get out of it and see what's going on. But Darrell, we just want to thank you so much for tapping in, jumping on the show, and really just having some all around conversation with us.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys. This is great. Like I said, I love what you guys are doing. More and more fathers need to hear this and come on this show and share their stories, because it's not easy. And man, we need to hear everybody, man. So I appreciate it and I love it.
Yeah, for sure, man. Totally agree with you. And just as Matthew said, we appreciate you just taking the time to tell your story, because I think that's why we started this platform, is to gather stories of Black fatherhood. Everybody has a story, and there's hundreds, thousands, millions of other people out there that can relate to your very own story. So we appreciate you taking the time. Have you ever, before we get out of here, have you ever watched All the Smoke, their podcast?
Yes, for sure. I've watched
Steven Jackson, Matt Morris. So Steven Jackson be doing this thing at the end called a begging segment. I'll be kind of taking this from him, but not anything material, man. But if you could potentially connect us with any other fathers in your circle to come on and tell their story too, that would be great. I know you mentioned kind of Russell Westbrook being connected with him. That would be a great father to come on. Or if you have any other fathers in your, you know, inner circle that you feel would be great to come on and tell their story, you know, definitely connect us with them. Because again, like I said, our goal is to tell stories of Black fatherhood from all angles. And, you know, we would just appreciate something like that.
Oh yeah, 100%. I got you guys. I'll definitely spread that word and let guys know you guys are doing a great thing. And like I said, we need to hear these guys' stories, because we don't know who is going to help, who is going to, you know, change. So definitely right. Important.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And my thing with guys like yourself, guys who've been in the league or actors or comedians, a lot of times when they get interviewed, it's all about their career, right? It's never really about who they are as a Black man. It's never who they are as a Black father. So that's kind of why we use this as our platform to unpack, you know, who you are as a Black man and Black father outside of the things that you've done in your career. Yeah, we'll talk about your career just a little bit here and there, but we really want to dive deep with who you are as a father. So yeah, man, if you can connect us, that would be great. This was a great episode, man.
Sure.
And we appreciate you for jumping on and joining us.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Yo, what's up? It's Darrell Wright, and I'm rocking with the Dear Fathers Podcast.
Listening to another episode of the Dear Fathers Podcast. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to our show on the platform of your choice. Follow us on Instagram at dear.fathers and check out our website, dearfathers.com, for more content. This is Matthew Kirby, and I'm signing out. Now let's get back to the fatherhood journey. Peace.
Real. Time is money and I'm working on that richer meal. It's up to me to drop the ball like I'm center field. I gotta touch lead better when I'm in the clear. I be in and out the cut like I'm Emmitt Smith. They try to get